got two picks.
Committee on Transportation will come to order. We have two items on the agenda today. The first being Senator Vanderveer, Senate File 1091. And we're anticipating that we're going to need to go fairly quickly because there's a meeting at 2 o'clock that we have to be done and out of here. Senator Vanderveer, I saw him. Here he comes. Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. Chair, I do have a delete all amendment, which puts the bill in the shape I'd like it in.
The A2
amendment.
Senator Gimsey moves the A2 amendment to Senate File 1091. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Senate File 1091 as amended deals with the prohibition on trucks on the Stillwater Lift Bridge. The bridge has had a history of difficulties with trucks getting through, and I believe that the design of the bridge, the age of the bridge, the fact that it's a lift bridge, the trusses that are over it, and the difficulty accessing through the bridge all combined to create a hazardous situation that that the mayor of Stillwater is here can document and provide some testimony on. And I think we, while we're waiting for the new bridge to be built, we do need to restrict access to this bridge. And Mayor Stillwater's here, Mr. Chair, and he's got quite an understanding of the history of it and can shed some more light on this.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Ken Horisky, Mayor of Stillwater, Minnesota. And I'm here to provide support and testimony for the bill that would effectively help to keep some of the trucks out of downtown Stillwater, providing our citizens and our merchants some relief in traffic. In fact, I believe we smiled on favorably last night. Yet another truck struck the bridge last night, taking out a span. Last summer, we had a truck that went through and took five spans out. This bridge has quite a history of trucks both either hitting the bridge or causing problems once they get into Stillwater, tying up traffic. There's a very tight turn exiting the bridge onto State Highway 95. These trucks try to maneuver the turn. They're hopping up on sidewalks where we have tourists standing by. They're taking up multiple lanes of traffic and just basically bottling up traffic for the citizens of Stillwater and our visitors. Currently, we have about 16,000 cars and trucks a day utilizing this crossing. And of that, about 2,500 are trucks or buses. As I've stated, in the last 2 years, we've had two closures of the bridge crossing due to trucks hitting the bridge and taking it out. And it looks like yet again we'll be having to close the bridge to make repairs due to last night's accident. When that bridge is closed, it does provide It does put the public safety at risk, as we have mutual aid agreements with Wisconsin, and we lose that crossing, plus it becomes a major inconvenience for our residents. Last year, the Minnesota State Patrol conducted 4 saturation inspections where they just basically sat there for a day and pulled trucks over and inspected them for various things. Surprisingly, we thought that most of the trucks using the Stillwater route were crossing to avoid the weight scales in Minnesota, just on the other side of the border on 94. And in fact, they are doing that, but we're not finding overweight trucks crossing the bridge. What we're finding is log violations and safety violations. In fact, during the 4 saturation inspections last year, one day 52% of the trucks were pulled out of service. The next inspection, 61.5% of the trucks were pulled out of service as inoperable, and they're driving across our bridge. Third inspection, 64% of the trucks were pulled out as inoperable. And on the fourth one, 77% of the trucks inspected were pulled off of the road due to safety violations, driver fatigue, log violations. But of those closures, I believe there was only 2 overweight trucks in there. So we're taking unsafe vehicles and running them through a downtown filled with residents, and you know, all of our residents look at this and just say, why are these trucks here? Based on these inspections, it's pretty evident they're trying to avoid the safety inspections on Highway 94. They're skirting the law. So we're looking for help to keep those trucks out of downtown Stillwater and prevent an accident like we had last night, where we're going to be having this bridge closed yet again, another truck damaging the bridge. We really want to take care of, we don't know how far the new bridge is, you know, how long it's going to take to get built. You know, we're here in 2013. We're very optimistic about it. But we have to make sure the bridge that we have lasts until the new river crossing is built. And so we're seeking a way to protect that new, to protect the existing river crossing. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Vandergeer, did you have another
question? Mr. Chair, and this language was developed by Senate Council in the new amendment, and working with MnDOT, I'm not. It's my understanding they don't oppose the bill, but they are here if you'd like to talk to them.
Senator, did you have another testifier? John Ganaway.
Sorry, the police chief wasn't able to make it this morning, so, or this afternoon. So okay. It would just be the mayor.
Okay. Questions from the committee. Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, if we were successful in passing the bill to prohibit trucks, is there an alternative route that trucks and buses are supposed to be going, as opposed to going on the bridge?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, there is a very easy route. It's Interstate 94, which is about, I think it's 5 to 7 miles south of there. And again, like I said, they're going through Stillwater to skirt the scales that are just on the other side of the Minnesota border and skirt the safety inspections.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Vandeveer, 9,000 pounds is pretty light. I mean, we're talking like a 3/4-ton truck or a 1-ton truck. So is the bridge that bad? I mean, Senator Carlson just got the weight of an ambulance. I think it was 13,000 or 10 to 13,000. So would there be an exemption for emergency vehicles? Or
Senator Vandergrift.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, the first part of your question, the 9,000 pounds, I believe, was derived because it's the exact same limitation on I-35E. So it was used before, and maybe Senate Council can help with that, where that specifically is. And secondly, there is an exclusion for in the amendment for doesn't apply to emergency vehicles.
Okay. Senate Counsel will speak to the 35E question.
Oh, Mr. Chair, the 9,000 pounds was suggested as a threshold that's enforceable and recognizable by MnDOT as it is enforced on I-35E. So it's a threshold that's easy to enforce, apparently, and considered reasonable when, in trying to limit truck traffic to a large extent. And MnDOT could probably comment on that if you want further understanding of that threshold.
And Senator Vanderveer, your original bill was 26,000 pounds. So the only difference between your original bill and the A2 amendment in weight was going from 26,000 down to 9,000. So the 26,000 was not due to the bridge. It was due to, actually 26,000 is not a limitation. Isn't that correct?
Correct. I think if I understand your question, the 26,000 pounds was not a limitation based on the ability of the bridge to hold it. No. It was attempting to get at a certain size truck, but we did have an amendment after doing for, that was the amount used in the bill last year. So prior to doing the delete everything, we had an amendment that was going to lower that in any way to get at closer to the what we're looking at. But it would have went down, I think we were going down to 20,000 pounds. But we also had a height in there. This eliminates the need for that, and I think it is less confusing. I can see how they would say it would be more enforceable because you can tell the difference quite easily. Telling the difference between 26,000 pounds and 20,000, wouldn't that be?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Kielash, question.
Mr. Chair, with this limited weight, it seems like it's going to be difficult for anybody on the Wisconsin side to deliver any goods to Stillwater businesses. It seems like an awful huge cut in the size of the trucks and limits it to basically small service trucks rather than, and I'm not sure, but do you have an estimate of how many trucks are going through over the bridge at this time?
Let's see. Senator
Vander.
Why don't I just let the mayor, can the mayor answer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, can we get somebody from MnDOT too?
Do we have somebody from the department that can answer that? Please state your name and go on with your answer.
I'm Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And I don't know the traffic count, but the percentage of the traffic that comes over the bridge is 3% heavy commercial vehicle. So it would be equivalent of truck traffic.
Mr. Chair, I do have
Senator Vanderveer.
The number here is 2,500 trucks a day.
Could I follow up? I guess one of my questions is if the Wisconsin, because this is a border bridge, doesn't the Wisconsin side also have to have some kind of posting to make this enforceable?
It's supposed to be just pedestrian and bike.
Mr. Peterson? Mr. Dorgan, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Dan Dorgan. I'm the bridge engineer with MnDOT. And I just want to start by saying this issue we've been, I think, looking at with legislators for the past year. I know Senator Salzman talked about this last year to us and of late Senator Vanderveer. But the question regarding Wisconsin, yes, to put a posting on the bridge, Wisconsin would also have to post on their side, Senator Kielash.
Follow up?
Yes, because the limiting factor of this bridge seems to me that there's going to be a whole new group of advocates for a new bridge over Stillwater. I'm wondering if that's not part of the strategy of this.
Is there a question in there?
I guess not. Thanks.
The mayor has a comment, if he could, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mayor.
The strategy, we've been waiting since President Truman for a new river crossing, and the buck didn't stop with President Truman, and we're not sure where the buck is going to stop. The strategy is not to try and push for a new river crossing. We have two problems in Stillwater. The long-term problem is solving the river crossing. The short-term problem is providing safety for our residents and our tourists, which are very important to our local economy. So we're trying to provide some immediate relief until that new river crossing can be constructed whenever it might happen.
Okay, we have Olson, Jungbauer, Olsen, and Skoy. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted MnDOT to respond, to be at the table to
all
right. Responses.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Vandeveer, it does seem to me as well, knowing vehicles, as I do from owning many different size vehicles for business for many years, that 9,000 is extremely undersized and really doesn't get at the problem. The problem is, as I see it, is the tractor-trailer type vehicles, the over-height vehicles that do cause damage to the bridge that then end up having the bridge closed, which causes great consternation, I'm sure, for the city. So I would not be in favor of this as it's written. I think if we could either deal with weight or keep it at single axles with a certain height or something so that delivery trucks that could handle the businesses in the city would be able to come in and out. Obviously, they don't have the same length problems in cutting over sidewalks that a tractor-trailer type of situation would have. So I want to make sure that we're not harming the businesses and we're understanding that the major close down of the bridges have been, to my knowledge in recent history, it's all been oversized things that are hitting on top and causing the bridge to get shut down for repairs, which also cost taxpayers money, obviously. So hopefully you'll...
We can address the size of the vehicle.
Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. Chairman and,
Mr. Dorgan.
And Senator Jungbauer, the 9,000 limit I'm not a bridges is my end of the business, not truck weights, but as we understood from our trucking people, the 9,000 that's on 35E generally limits it to pickups with trailers. So that's kind of effectively, I think it stays just under the commercial vehicle loads of 10,000. So they are dealing with the smaller vehicles at that point.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair and to Senator Vandeveer and the issue of the weight, 35E was a specific different issue that was dealt with by the courts and by the citizens, and I think that's a very poor example to use in a situation like this. We're not looking at something that is specifically a residential type of traffic, and that's what was really called for in the 35 agreement. So the idea was, and there's plenty of other roads and other ways to get around the 35 issue, you are forcing a lot of smaller business traffic to go a long way out of the way, which would increase the costs of any business in Stillwater to have to go around that bridge to get anything that might come from the Wisconsin side. We don't have a problem with things. Obviously, they're coming from the Minnesota side. But if the issues are, as you state, the damages to the bridge, the people cutting across sidewalks, things like that, then that's not being harmed by things that could, in fact, go up to about 26,000 pounds. But even a 26,000-pound vehicle could ostensibly be over height with a box van that was oversized. But if we deal with the height issue and keep it at a single axle, I'm sure that will get rid of any problems that have occurred in recent history on that bridge and still not tie up residential traffic.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Vandeveer.
We would be very amenable. We had considered single axle, but I'm not sure if then MnDOT would not be not opposing because they had, and maybe they could comment on whether just single axle would be easy to enforce and clear to everybody, because that would probably solve the majority of the problem.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, we have
Senator Jungbauer.
Many bridge postings that have specific weights and specific axle limitations and signage that accomplishes that, so that's not out of the ordinary whatsoever.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer, the 9,000, please realize, is not based on any analysis of the bridge. We went through that last July, and I know I discussed this with some of the members of the committee. The bridge can carry legal loads, and our engineering analysis doesn't lead us to the 9,000. So this bill, as Senator Vandeveer said, the department is not opposing, but we're also not supporting either. I mean, we're just trying to take a neutral position here. So it would be up to the legislature if they would like to impose that limit. We do have concerns, though, about what Wisconsin's response is going to be. As joint owner, we cannot control that. And also somewhat concerned about the precedent, because the 9,000 from 35E was just given as the only example we are aware of on the state system where there's where that type of posting was put on a roadway for the purpose of keeping trucks off. I'm not aware of another place on the system where that exists. So we weren't necessarily saying that's the way to do it. That was the only other example we were aware of.
Mr. Dorgan, is that bridge posted for height?
Yes, the bridge is posted as you approach it. It is just a little over 13 foot is what the posting on. So 13 feet and some inches. Sorry, Senator, I can't remember the
two
exact.
Inches.
13 feet two?
Okay.
So it is posted for that. It is also posted for weight. It is posted for 40 tons, meaning it can carry legal weight, but no overloads are allowed on that bridge. And as we rate it, it safely rates for that rating.
Thank you. Senator Rolstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I originally had thought that the problem was the capacity of the bridge, but you've just explained that it's really not the bridge issue. But so I'll ask a question. Is it marked 13-2, like, further up in Wisconsin and up on 36 so that a driver doesn't, you know, head down there and all of a sudden he makes the turn and it's, oh, cripes, I'm 13-6 and it's a 13-2 bridge?
Mr. Dorgan.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, I'm not familiar with the signage back on 35, but typically when there are reduced clearances, we have advance warnings. But I apologize, I can't guarantee you that's up there. I'm assuming it is.
It's by the old drive-in theater.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So it is up on top of the hill on the Wisconsin side?
About a mile back.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I just kind of want to bring you back to what the mayor said in his testimony about the number of trucks and the numbers that are out of compliance. Mm-hmm. It appears to me that it's unreasonable to think that there's 2,500 trucks delivering in and out of Stillwater in any given day, and it's unreasonable for me to think that such a large percentage of the trucks servicing Stillwater are out of compliance with our road rules, because the general in-service trucks are not at that great of out-of-compliance percentage. So it looks to me like the mayor's right. Trucks are going through Stillwater to avoid the scale and the inspection. So why would we not try to put a stop to that? I think Senator Vandeveer's got a pretty good idea here. I don't know about the size. It seems that if it's visually able to be discernible by the highway patrol, that's a good idea. But if you can do that with a single axle and go to 26, that's probably. But just the general concept of getting these out of compliance trucks in compliance by running them through a scale seems reasonable. So I'm going to support Senator Vandeveer's idea, and I hope he works on the size and gets that figured out.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman. Rev. Saltzman, Olson, Olsen, and Bonoff.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor, thank you for coming here today. As you know, I have worked with you on this for the past year, and I have pages of emails with MnDOT and with Senate Counsel looking at this issue. And I'm pleasantly surprised to see MnDOT is neutral now, because I have worked with you repeatedly. I have talked to Dan Dorgan, Gary Peterson, Nick Thompson, and Eric Rudine of MnDOT for the past year, asking them what are any options that we might have. And you adamantly stated many of these issues, concerns about how you would be able to enforce this with Wisconsin, that there were interstate traffic issues, and that getting the bridge built was the best alternative that we have. So I'm pleased to see that now you're open to that. But I do want to note that this is not something that has not been addressed. I do want to ask the mayor, though, because I did ask you about this, the 2006 Memorandum of Agreement, which is regarding the New River Crossing project that was agreed to. The Stillwater Lift Bridge Advisory Committee was formed to advise MnDOT regarding management of the bridge during the period of use before the new bridge is built. And MnDOT is to seek the advice of this advisory committee until the final bridge plan is adopted. Nowhere that I have seen in that report has the city ever brought this issue to the advisory committee, which would be giving MnDOT advice on how they should manage the bridge. So obviously, you know, legislation is one option, but what has the city done to address this issue? As I've asked, how are you, using some of the pieces in place of how to manage this? So I'm just wondering, I don't see anything in the minutes or report that has been done.
Mayor Hrisky?
Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you. Up until Tuesday, I was unaware of such a committee. We are a small organization. We don't have a lobbyist. I don't even have staff. So we've been working through our local legislators to try and address this problem.
So it's about, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
I guess, Mayor, that I did contact you about the Lift Advisory Committee over the summer, and I did mention that to the city. And I did suggest that would be also a good place to advocate for this. And I certainly want you to know that we've been trying to work on this, and I understand that, you know, the city is not a larger, you know, city. We've tried to work on this. And I want to thank this committee especially for noting the importance of the Stillwater Bridge crossing and that this committee targeted that bridge as one of those to be replaced. And those of us who supported that legislation and have continued to support MnDOT to accelerate that bridge is the best long-term solution. So I just wanted to note that there has been a lot of work done on this, and I am glad to see that MnDOT now is seeing the light and is willing to work with us on this issue.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the important thing to remember here is that this is a very unique situation. It isn't, you know, the problem isn't just the ability of the bridge to support weight. The problem is it's a very old design. It has trusses over it, and things get caught in it. And also the traffic, the way you access it on the trunk highway system, I mean, it's a trunk highway bridge. We were surprised to learn that it is a trunk, that these narrow roads that they have to traverse to get through and around corners in Stillwater are extremely narrow, but it's still part of the trunk highway system, but they can't do it. They physically can't do it without going into other lanes and up on the sidewalks at times. This is unique, and going to a specific we don't have a process for dealing with this that I can see that's going to solve the problem, other than if you passing this bill and then attempting to get Wisconsin to go along with it. That's really all the people of Stillwater have. And this, Senator Saltzman, if you'd like the bill, you can have it. We just want to help these people, and I think we're working together to do that. You've worked very hard on this. And MnDOT has too, and we found a way that doesn't rely on engineering, because if MnDOT relies on engineering on a bridge they said can carry that weight, you know, they can't do that. So, you know, they're in a box too. So the approach that we are taking here is a little bit different, but it is a very unique situation at the same time, and it is a very much a public safety concern.
We have Olson, Bonoff, Dunbar, and Moi. And let's try to be as brief as we can. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You earlier made the comment, Senator Vanderveer, about the reason that it appeared that it had come from MnDOT, that the rationale for going to the 9,000 is being easier to enforce. But is the other thought in what you have just said, and others too, that the trunk – are decisions made on this based only on the bridge capacity? Is that independent of the roadways approaching it or next to it? Because if the trunk highway has got some restrictions, it seems to me that you have a double reason for putting some restrictions on. But I think at this point, I agree with Senator Scoy wholeheartedly on this. It's a matter we're down to kind of what the weight is. And I don't know what the difference between the 9 and the 26 is in terms of being able to clearly identify. Is it the bread truck delivery, or does that get to a small semi? Or what is there a category of trucks that you could find a weight that still is would be easy to enforce that would accomplish the ends that you have?
Is that a question for MnDOT, I would assume?
Wherever.
Mr. Dorgan. Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the 9,000 pounds was from the 35E example, so it limits generally to about a pickup with a trailer behind it. If the 26,000 pound posting, from our understanding, as that was discussed with the senator, you could still have empty tractor trailers that can meet the 26,000 pound limit. So at 26,000 pounds, you could still have some large trucks at least moving empty over that bridge.
So Mr. Chair,
Senator Olson.
You've said that the MnDOT is neutral, but what would be, what in your view, if you consider both the highway limitations, the concerns for the traversing near downtown street of in Stillwater, and the sharp turns and everything across this bridge, what would be a reasonable weight that would still be enforceable? Does it have to go down to the 9,000? Is there something that would keep the semis off? Maybe the small delivery trucks would be allowed? Is there a way of determining that?
Senator Vanderveer?
I think, personally, single axle, that was kind of that, because that, I think, goes up to 26,000 pounds.
Yep.
But so it's within the weight limit, but they don't have the length issue, and they could be managed through the space. So that was our preference. It's just getting clearance to do that.
Well, Senator Vanderveer, I think we have a legal designation, maybe someone else can answer, of not a truck route?
That's what I thought. Mr. Chair, I thought so too, but we looked for it and weren't able to find it because that's what we were looking for originally. To make a short story long, but
Council said that is not in statute. Mm-hmm. So this is what's in statute. This,
so this is what
this is what MnDOT suggested. Okay. So we have Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I learned quite a few years ago I was dodging a scale in Wisconsin. And I pulled under the bridge, and a state trooper was sitting under the bridge, and he offered to escort me back to the scale, which he did. And my point would be, and I was legal. I was pretty close, but I was legal. But
that time.
If Captain Urquhart had his guys setting up in downtown Stillwater just by that bridge, and they tagged a bunch of guys, I would think the word would get out pretty fast that this is not a way you want to try and dodge that scale.
Why not just...
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I may, we've done four saturation reports, and it doesn't seem to matter. It might ease up for a few days or a few weeks, but they go back to their old habits very quickly. So, All we're doing is we're looking for a way to pull some of these trucks out. If it's height, weight, length of bed, number of axles, you know, we're open to anything. We're just looking for some help.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up, I do have a chart from the commercial vehicles, and a two-ton, you can go up to 40,000 with your axles 10 feet apart. So 26,000, I would think that might be a pretty good compromise, saying single or a dual axle vehicle, two axle vehicle. because then the weight maximum would be 40,000, and I think that would address your concerns. If you wouldn't mind if I made that amendment, I would be supportive of that.
That's what I wanted to do.
They're happy.
To
I
anything. That's the issue.
That's, it does sound like it would do it, Senator. I'll see, Mr. Chair.
I want to talk to that issue before he does.
We have some other questions. We have Bonhoff, Jungbauer, Moi, Sieben, and Saltzman yet. Let's go a little bit further, if you'd like. Senator Jungbauer specifically wants to talk to that. So let's go. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, very briefly, Senator Vanderveer, thank you for bringing this forward. I know that Senator Saltzman has been very concerned about this, and so I really appreciate that you brought it forward, that we see this as a possible solution, that MnDOT's remaining neutral, being open to solving it, and that the mayor is here at the table, too. So I think this is an example of good government, and now we might even get the axle weight change. So that's good. Thank you.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mayor and Senator Vanderveer, I do want this to move forward, so I'm trying to listen to everybody and come up with an idea, and I think the key is, you know, possibly that 26,000, but not having any combination there. And to Senator Skoy, and you're right on, because we have the saturation in my district all the time, people trying to run the scales. And that's where my thought process was coming from. In 90% of our non-compliant vehicles are units that are combinations, and it's brake issues and things that are in the trailers and that. So most of the people that have the trailer problems are always trying to run around the back ways and skip out of the scales. So, but to the mayor's point is, we do that. We have it in the center of my district. They catch a lot of people, and as soon as they're gone, the word gets back out, and everybody's back running the back roads again. So it doesn't work long term. And the combination, by not allowing a combination except on a standard passenger type of vehicle or pickup truck, you're keeping away from the Bobcat trailers and other things coming down the hill that cause potential harm to the public. So I'm trying to listen to everybody and come up with something that'll move this forward, because I think it's very good. And, you know, having sat at the intersection in Stillwater there, and you see the combinations coming through, and, you know, you're lucky to keep the front end of your car. There isn't the room for them to swing wide in there.
Senator Mott.
Mr. Chair, we've had a very robust discussion, and I agree absolutely with Senator Skoy, so I'd like to move the 8-2 amendment, and then when it's appropriate, I'd like to move the bill.
Senator Ma, we already adopted the A2 amendment.
Well, very good. Okay. Then I'd like to move the bill, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ma moves Senate File 1091. It's more discussion?
As amended.
As amended, yes. And it goes to the floor, members. So this is our time to discuss it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mentioned an amendment.
To the amendment.
Mr. Chair, okay. If I could.
Senator Vanderveer.
We could work on that, Senator Saltzman and Senator Olsen and myself, and figure out what on the way to the floor if the committee was all right with that.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be great.
Senator Vanderveer, shall we table the bill for you?
Mr. Chair.
You want to do this as a floor amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, it's a two-sentence amendment. So I think that it's not that difficult. If Senator Olsen wants to do that, and then let's just move the bill to the floor.
Okay. You have something ready? Any further questions on the bill? Okay, we're going to.
What are we doing?
We have a motion to pass the bill, but now we have an amendment to.
Are we amending now?
Ms. Berezovsky will help you put together the words for the amendment. And Senator Mott, will you withdraw your amendment or your motion to move the bill until we get an amendment on it?
I'll withdraw that, if it'll help.
Thank you. Do we have any more clarifying questions in the meantime here? We had Sieben, Moi, Saltzman. Saltzman?
So while we're waiting, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, and not to delay the meeting, but how will you work with Wisconsin to the MnDOT folks? Because that's what I was told repeatedly could be some issues. I have heard from Wisconsin as I've tried to work with them and urging them to get their funding for the side of the bridge. And when the bridge has been closed, I have heard from Senator Harsdorf, who is from Wisconsin, who wondered why, you know, we're not working faster, why we're not working 24/7 to get the bridge reopened, and has specifically talked to me about truck traffic being restricted. So there seems to be a resistance on that side. Do you see that that will be an issue?
Mayor Hersky?
Mr. Chair and Senator, if I might respond. The city of Hudson is more than happy to send their truck traffic through downtown Stillwater. So there is a resistance to accepting additional traffic through Hudson. You know, they're more than happy to send it through Stillwater.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
To that point.
Senator Salzman.
That was not my question. I understand that. I'm looking at the enforcement side of it, the practical side. I absolutely understand the problem. I know that what the issue is. I'm talking about, do we need to do something else? Is there anything else that we can do as a legislative body or as on our soapbox to make this case to Wisconsin? So I'm asking MnDOT because they do have to work with the state of Wisconsin on this issue.
Mr. Dorgan.
Senator Carlson, members of the committee, Senator Salzman, this bill, of course, just came up for us in the last few days. You know, we haven't addressed how we will deal with Wisconsin. Obviously, if it passes, we will contact Wisconsin DOT and inform them of the statute that's been passed in Minnesota and ask for them to cooperate with us and see if we can work that out. But, you know, I hope all appreciate we're working with another state, so it's uncertain what their response will be.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't know what the agreement is with Wisconsin. Minnesota doesn't have a right to put any restriction on their half of the bridge. One thing that I think would be helpful is if we, in fact, passed a bill. It's, you know, it's, I think it's hard for an individual legislator to call it without any sign of some solid backing to enter any negotiations. But maybe there's some restrictions that you could put on the roadway leading up to that approach that doesn't allow, you know, any more than this, so that you could catch people going one way or the other. If it's is there some other tactics that could be used if we pass this legislation that might get the attention and change the behavior on the Wisconsin side?
Is that directed to me?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure why they put you on the spot, because obviously you said you're the bridge specialist, and I think we're dealing with a little bit more than just the bridge.
He's the wisest man.
Senator
we know.
Vandergrift.
Oh, okay.
Senator Olson, it will have to be worked out, and we don't know exactly what will happen, but if we need more help and the committee is able to do that, we'll come back and ask as we go through this. But for now, this would be, as you said, extremely helpful.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Dorgan, on this Stillwater lift bridge, do you have the authority to close that?
Mr. Dorgan.
Senator Murphy and members of the committee, we, on an emergency basis, certainly we do, but we own this bridge, as a lot of other bridges, jointly with Wisconsin. So when we make load posting decisions, we always work with the other DOT, and each informs each other of what they're finding and come to consensus has, you know, been the typical. So we're kind of in uncharted territory on this one. But for the closing on an emergency basis, yes, we would, if we were closing for other reasons. Condition has deteriorated and we believe it needs to be closed, we would also talk to Wisconsin to make sure they're in agreement on the decision. That just as a courtesy as a joint owner.
Yeah. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Dorgan, the reason for my question is you know, by act of the legislature, we could close that bridge. And maybe the state of Wisconsin should be enlightened. You know, this issue about this lift bridge, in my opinion, has went on way too long. And if Wisconsin doesn't want to be our partners in this regard, if we have to kick it to another level, I'm just saying that there's a couple people around the table that are willing to do that. So okay. That may be a tool for your toolbox.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Dorgan, I have a question also that, and actually, this is just a general and maybe you can answer. But when these trucks are going over that bridge, are they dodging a Wisconsin truck stop or are they dodging a Minnesota weigh station? Do we know which one that is? Mayor?
I suspect that when they're coming from Wisconsin into Minnesota, they're dodging the Minnesota weigh station. The Wisconsin weigh station, I believe, is up just before Menominee, so it's probably about 30 miles down 94. And I think what's happening is they clear Eau Claire and they cut north a little bit and just run parallel to 94 into Stillwater, and they can pass two weigh stations. And as I understand it, it's mainly the logs that they're time that they can drive that they're trying to dodge. We pulled one driver off the road who had been driving for, I thought it was 20 hours, I believe was the number I heard, and just glassy-eyed, and, you know, they said it was almost like he was drunk, you know, just from lack of sleep in their downtown.
That's crazy.
So, that's Mayor, crazy. The allowing this to go on is also allowing, or maybe enabling, the dodging of these scales or of the stoppage.
Exactly, because I think it was the senator that said that, you know, we don't have 5,000 deliveries to Stillwater a day across that bridge with our trucks.
Senator Olsen, is your amendment ready?
Yes, and I think it's right over there.
Commercial combinations.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment would, I think it's easier to just delete 1.4 and 1.5, and then the language would read, A, the Commissioner of Transportation shall prohibit the operation of, one, trucks with a gross vehicle weight in excess of 26,000 pounds, and two, all commercial vehicle combinations on the still, and then goes back to the margin, on the Stillwater lift bridge located, and so on. Mm-hmm.
Works for us, Mr. Chair.
I'll move that language.
Senator Olsen moves the amendment that you have just heard read. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. We're back on to Senator Moy.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 1091 as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Senate floor.
Senator Moy moves Senate File 1091 as amended and to be forwarded to the floor. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We're on our second item on the agenda, which is the Department of Transportation budget overview. So, Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is, I believe, the last time that Mr. Gray is going to present a budget from MnDOT. Is that correct?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, that is likely correct. Yes, I have accepted a position as St. Louis County Administrator effective April 13th, and will be leaving MnDOT in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I say that with very mixed emotions, and thank you for the acknowledgement.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, in that regard,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Gray, I got to go to another committee meeting. As a matter of fact, I could be in three committee meetings right now, but the other one I have to get to.
Mr. Chair, how soon they forget.
Senator Gray.
Thank you. Goodbye.
No. Yeah.
Excuse
but,
me.
I just want to say, you know, on behalf of the committee, we've always enjoyed working with you, and we appreciate the information that you've given us from the department, and it's always been spot on, and we've enjoyed a personal friendship besides that, and you know, you're always welcome to come back wherever you go, and, you know, we hate losing you, but we understand. So, but thanks again for all your hard work. I think the state's better for having you. MnDOT.
Mr. Gray. Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, thank you. I really appreciate that. And as I said, it's with mixed emotions, but I'm going to a great professional challenge, and sometimes you just need to stretch yourself in your career path as well. So, but I'm leaving a good job, a good agency, and a good committee to work with. So I really appreciate your words. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, could I do a time check that might tailor the presentation dependent upon?
We can, Mr. Gray, we can stay here until 3 or be kicked out. So it looks like 3 is good enough.
Mr. Chair, that should be more than sufficient time. Thank you for that. Given that time frame, and we will try to push this through so we cover thoroughly but quickly, I do want to apologize for both the commissioner and deputy commissioner. Commissioner Sorrell had a long-standing commitment with external partners in our road research board to be away today, but the deputy commissioner was scheduled to meet. Unfortunately, he has severe back problems and came into the office today and could not even sit, stand, or look straight ahead without wincing in pain. So he begs your indulgence. I'm going to make a few comments that I think would be reflective of some of the things they would share, and then we'll go right into the budget piece of this puzzle. First
Mr.
of all,
Gray, Mr. Gray, Senator Murphy and I sympathize with the deputy commissioner.
Actually, Mr. Chair, the deputy commissioner thought you might have some empathy. But he truly was in pain and is at the doctor's office this afternoon trying to see if he can't get squared away. But I do know that both the commissioner and Connie, as deputy commissioner, would have offered up several opening remarks, if you will, including during the confirmation hearing, Commissioner Sorrell commented on several key areas of focus for him, providing a safe multimodal transportation system, improving mobility to enhance both the movement of people and freight, as we just heard, as being a critical factor, to promote innovation inside and outside of the organization, to become a statewide transportation leader and an employer of choice, reflective of MnDOT's diverse contractor environment and population. And perhaps most of all, from a leadership standpoint, to be transparent, to build public trust and confidence in MnDOT. I think he would say that in his 10 months that he's been on board, or approximately almost a year now, I guess, there's been a dedicated path to those that vision and to achieving those goals. Today's budget presentation is going to focus on the financial the side of the equation. But I think that the commissioner would also talk to the importance of the passage of Chapter 152 in the sense of the added responsibilities and opportunities that that funding bill has entailed for the agency, and the fact that we are working aggressively and positively towards delivering on that bill and its promises. I know that he would talk about the status of the economic stimulus package and the fact that we have worked very hard and successfully both internally and with our partners externally, particularly local governmental units, to ensure that we're ready to deliver all of the federal funds that are coming to the state of Minnesota, not only the highway but across the modal opportunities of freight, rail, and passenger rail and transit. And he would I think at this point in time, take a step back and say that we're committed as an agency in this budget to supporting that vision that he's aggressively articulated internally and externally, and that he wants to link resources to our performance measures to make sure that we can deliver on our promises and indeed fulfill the strategic vision of making your destination our priority. And finally, he'd say that this financial framework is one for the future and represents a commitment to that vision. I think that he would also acknowledge that we are a little bit in limbo land in terms of where, having just announced the February forecast, that this presentation focuses on our January recommendations in response to the November forecast. Unfortunately, there was some additional pressures on trunk highway and transportation resources and revenue streams as well. So we're in the process of working with the governor's office to indeed offer up a budget recommendation. So this is going to be a little bit, if you will, less than precise, as we haven't made those final determinations with the governor's office. At this point in time, I talk a little bit about the budget overview and the framework for this discussion. And again, I think that we can make this a complete dialogue in the next 45 minutes, which, given the pressures and time pressures of all the senators in and outside of this committee, I think would probably be appreciated.
Mr. Gray, you mentioned Bonner. About the November forecast. Have you also taken into account for this presentation the federal stimulus dollars and how those are interwoven into the budget?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Bonhoff, yes, and I think the macro assumption is one that we're going to take advantage of all of those dollars. I reiterate that. And two, that there is a bill that I believe has been delivered to the chairs of the committees in the Senate and the House that reflects the needed spending authority and enabling legislation to go down that path. So the presumption, while we're talking about our base budgets and changes here, is that over and above that, that we will have the necessary language and appropriation authority and enabling legislation to indeed deliver the stimulus monies.
Thank you.
Good question. Thank you. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll move into the balance of the discussion. As we note here, the overall message is that there's a relatively few number of initiatives. And again, these initiatives are the January governor's recommendations. And some of those are going to be subject to further scrutiny, if not changing. But Chapter 152 really set the stage for us in this upcoming biennium, quite frankly. As I noted, we're not immune from the general fund deficit pressures. We have our modal operations, particularly transit, that feel the pinch of general revenue streams, of which MVEST is still a significant piece, both for Met Transit and for our Greater Minnesota Transit operations. We are going to be very focused on aligning our federal revenue use and timing. And as this committee is aware, one of the most complex areas for that is around the management of our state road construction program and utilizing not only regular federal formula funds, but also advanced construction financing to accelerate projects to the maximum extent possible. So it's a little bit more complex than the straightforward pay-as-you-go mentality, if you will. Address the trunk highway fund balance has a new meaning. This, quite frankly, was prepared in advance of this March or the February forecast, and we come across about $60 to $80 million of fund balance pressures for this biennium that were not in place at the time of the November forecast. So we'll talk to that. Again, a reminder that the governor's revised budget submission will be later in March, and we'll have more specific or revised recommendations at that point. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gray, I'm under the understanding that there are funds that are going around the state government and going directly to city and county governments for other parts of the stimulus package. Are there funds that are being treated like that for transportation?
Mr. Chair, that's a little bit of a yes and no, mostly no, and I'll explain. I believe that the bill language that we've established has the flexibility for the funds to continue to run through MnDOT, all federal funds in particular on the highway side, But the flexibility to channel that to where the projects are ready and the local government units are ready to do the work and or MnDOT's ready to do the work. So I think there's some ability to flex those dollars back and forth, but largely we'll follow the same framework for running federal funds through the trunk highway fund, if you will, and on to our local partners. And so I think that's the language that we're proposing currently. For the modes, I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think most of the transit funds will come through our transit office. I believe it might be a separate specific localities or projects for some of the other modes. And I think that as each of them, our plan is to have each of the modes come up and talk briefly about their recommendations, their status, and maybe we can comment to that effect about the economic stimulus, because that's certainly on everybody's mind.
Okay, thank you.
So with that, the overview, I just wanted to talk that our budget for the last couple of bienniums has been categorized by program. We have a multimodal program, including our aeronautics, transit, and freight offices. State roads is split into three key components, if you will. Infrastructure investment and planning, which, as is noted, is our two parts, a construction program and the program delivery, the planning, design, delivery and management of the projects. It also includes our infrastructure operations and maintenance, which is probably where we have our most intensive and largest body of employees supporting our maintenance and traffic operations. The third program not noted on here is electronic communications, and we will talk to that as well. Of course, a significant piece of our budget is the apportionment or pass-through monies from our highway user state tax revenues that go to our local counties and cities, and we will talk to that briefly. And finally, the most modest piece, but one that is a little bit of a category of its own, is general support and services, and that includes kind of the management and leadership and back office, finance, human resource, technology functions of the agency, as well as our dedicated funds towards buildings replacement and maintenance. With that, I think I'm going to move right into the individual programs, and I'm going to ask Mr. Tim Henkel, who is our Director of Program and Modal Management, to come and talk us through our multimodal piece of the program, and it will be those three programs that are highlighted on that overview sheet: aeronautics, transit, and freight, and then he'll make a kind of overall comment regarding economic stimulus relating to those arenas as well. And the page numbers that you see referenced in your handout are specific page references to either the narrative or the change request area in your budget book. But I think this is probably at enough level for now to walk through right from the overhead. And we won't be going into depth in the budget book unless requested by a specific question or inquiry.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Henkel. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tim Henkel. I'm the director of MnDOT's Modal Planning and Program Management Division. Getting right to the into the nuts and bolts, the aeronautics area of the modal areas within the department, you can see that the appropriations go to specific areas, air transportation operations. And I'll try to go into just a little bit of depth so everybody understands where those appropriations are used. The air transportation appropriations or services, that goes to the planes that provide services and to the pilots that provide services to fly the governor as well as you and other agency staff around this state. Airport system investments and planning, this is the technical assistance, the administration that we provide across this state to the 136 airports to ensure that those airports are planned for, the infrastructure is provided, the maintenance is provided, and equipment, et cetera. The aviation system management is for the weather information systems, the repair of the navigational aid systems that exist across the state for safe flight, the airport inspection process, as well as licensing in the airports and the aircraft registration. Finally, traveler information. This is information that is provided to pilots across this state and really across this nation, airport directories, airport charts, as well as the weather map that many of us see that is televised that provides information regarding current weather and aids pilots in preparing for their navigation. The direct appropriations for the aviation area aeronautics is on page 20 of your handouts as well, if you need to look at that in more detail. We'll just spell out some of the high-level information. $19.6 million in base airport appropriations per year. And if you need more information about the source of those funds, we can provide that later. $900,000 base appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund per year. And on the statutory side, there are also funds that are provided at $100 million average.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned page 20 on a handout, and I'm having trouble finding where page 20 is.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hinkle.
Senator, I believe it's in the full budget guidebook, and if don't know if you have a copy of that.
We do not have a copy of that.
If you do not, we will make sure that you get access to
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will continue to the next. Who's got the? Oh, that's there. We go. Thank you. Talk about the change level for the aeronautics area. If you recall, back in fiscal year 2008, the appropriation was decreased for fiscal year 2009, and the projects that we had programmed for fiscal year 2009 were left unfunded. The governor does request a 2.25 one-time appropriation in fiscal year 2010 for airport development grants, which would enable more preservation and safety projects across the state and help to address that issue of the decrease that occurred through previous legislation.
Mr. Chair, if I could. I'd like to add just a little bit of detail that might help out the members, especially in the absence of a budget book. Of the $19.6 million base appropriation, somewhere north of $14 million is for capital projects. It would be the equivalent of the state road construction program. This would be the airport construction program, and it would be focused on everything from navigational aids and maintenance and hangar activity to runway construction and extensions and replacement and maintenance. In addition, the February forecast indicated a softening in the revenue stream for the airport funds. Their primary funding sources include inline property flight taxes and registration fees for private pilots, as well as for a fuel tax. And the fuel tax is the one that's softening the most. So at this point in time, this recommendation, which was based on a fund balance projection in the November forecast, is an example of a request that the governor's office and the department will be revisiting to see if that's financially feasible or doable. On the bright side, perhaps Mr. Hinkle could talk about the prospects for economic stimulus.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gray,
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Hinkle, I know the Duluth folks came to see us about their airport. Did they get into the budget book? Are we doing any of the improvements that they've been suggesting were needed?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hinkle.
Senator Bonhoff, yes, we are working towards those improvements. And to quickly highlight, our expectations at this point for funding out of the Recovery Act is somewhere in the area of $15 million to $20 million for this state. We're still working through FAA. FAA has the responsibility for identifying those priorities, and we're hoping to see those priorities shortly.
Thank you.
Continuing then on to the transit category, transit investments appropriations go to transit system investment and planning, which includes passenger rail. This is for the development of plans as well as the development of passenger, the grant provider work that we do. Transit operations and maintenance goes to activities that support commuter bus projects, the operations, the equipment, the stations, and park and rides across rural Minnesota. The transit administration is for specific office management, the administration that we do to support those providers across the state of Minnesota, and the coordination work that we do there. And then finally, the bike and ped area is the provision of bike and pedestrian facilities, the insurance that those bike and ped facilities are supported in transportation projects across the state. The direct appropriations are currently at 18.784 in terms of base, which comes from the general fund, as well as a little bit coming from the trunk highway fund per year, about $775 million. On the statutory side, you can see that some funding comes from the MVEST, and there is expected to be a ramp-up of those MVEST funds in the future years. $15 million estimated. Mr. Gray may correct that estimate based upon some of the recent forecasts, but this report shows $15 million and then $18 million for fiscal year 2011. There are also federal funds that are received for transit, and they are in the amount of $147 million for grants for fiscal year 2010 and 2011. Please note that a large portion of that federal fund, in this case, includes the North Star project and the completion of that project that is ongoing.
Mr. Chair, the amounts in the brackets for the 15 and 18 million basically reflect that there's about $1 million a year softening in the MVEST revenue stream. So as we look at the Greater Minnesota Transit Program and impacts of potential general fund appropriation reduction and the MVEST coming in, it's once again a case of less more. The good news is we're phasing in MVEST revenues but we're phasing them at a lower rate than planned because the total MVEST stream is less. This would apply also to leased vehicles, MVEST and leased vehicles, and any car rental fees, which are all part of the Chapter 152. But this is probably one of the best examples of a link to the general fund problem that the legislature and the state is facing. And the impact here is that there's $2 million less over the biennium coming in from what is now an increasingly significant revenue source to Greater Minnesota Transit.
Mr. Chairman and members, economic recovery expectation here is about $25 million to MnDOT, and that is in the 5311 and 5307 categories. Those funds need to go directly to capital investments, facilities, fleet, as well as any IT PC type improvements that can be made to support those operations. Cannot go to operations. On the other hand, the Met Council has reported to you, Chair Bell, in his report a few weeks ago, that there are also funds that go to the Metropolitan Council. To add on to the statement that Mr. Gray made earlier in response to MnDOT's pass-through for funds, those portions of funds, nearly $73 million, that go directly to the Met Council will not be touched by the department. Those are the few funds out of this Recovery Act that have a direct apportionment and appropriation to the Met Council for the purposes of work that they will do.
And Mr. Hinkle, there's no match required for those, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Those are 100% federal funds.
Thank you.
Looking at the change level for transit.
Senator Dibble has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Why don't we finish this, and then I had a couple of comments about transit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The governor is proposing a reduction in the general fund appropriation in the amount of $1.924 million per year, or approximately 10% of the receded funds, to help to address the state's general fund deficit. The MVEST phase-in provides additional resources, however, as Mr. Gray has discussed in 2010 and 2011, and we expect that even with that general fund reduction proposal that we can sustain existing service levels. We're certainly looking at that projection, and as we look at the softening of MVEST, we'll be able to report later as to any impacts that might occur there.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to comment on this section vis-a-vis in relationship to Metro Transit, because I know that some folks have been anxious about the fact that there's a general fund reduction to Greater Minnesota Transit and no corresponding general fund reduction to metro area transit operations. And the difference is because the Metro Transit area is more greatly exposed to the MVEST shortfall. And in fact, what was an expected $45 million shortfall over the coming biennium is a $63 million shortfall, proportionally significantly greater. And while the governor didn't deliver a general fund cut, he's doing nothing to propose a way to make up for that MVEST shortfall. So he's leaving it to the Met Council to work with us to figure out some creative ways. And, of course, the ideas that have been put forth, we've already heard in this committee, things like some of the stimulus dollars that come in for capital purposes maybe can bump out some of our existing capital dollars in the area on the other side that could be flexed for operating purposes, those sorts of things. So it's really not a apples-to-apples comparison with Greater Minnesota Transit and Metro Area Transit in terms of the general fund discussion. Granted, the MVEST has become a part of Greater Minnesota Transit's funding picture as well. But also keep in mind, $25 million is coming in for capital purposes in Greater Minnesota. That's a lot for Greater Minnesota Transit capital. That's huge. We'll figure this all out as we go forward. But just on that general fund piece, we just kind of need to keep that in mind. $60-some million in the shortfall for Metro Area Transit. Proportionally significantly bigger and simply not addressed, so taking a hit to their general fund would just make that much worse.
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move quickly through the freight appropriations area, and then I'll hand it off to Mr. Gray to go on into the SRC appropriations. On the freight side, there is no change level request, but let me brief you on the elements of where the appropriations goes to. First and foremost, the freight area includes rail and port programs. So we administer the Mercy Program, the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, as well as the Port Development Assistance Program. Also, we administer the grade crossing, highway rail grade crossing, and rail safety construction activities across the state, as well as the freight planning necessary to develop plans and information that supports the integrated system of freight in the state of Minnesota and coordination of this state and other states in this nation. We also administer the oversize and overweight permits program. Single trip and annual permits are authorized and given through our office, as well as authorizing the movement of freight across the state in those trucks. We also have the motor carrier education program, the credentialing program, and the safety evaluation activities that ensure that we have safe operations within the state of Minnesota. The direct appropriations come from the general fund, a slight amount, as well as the trunk highway side, $365,000 in base appropriations per year out of the general fund, and $4.9 million of base from the trunk highway fund on an annual basis. Statutorily, about $12.8 million in federal funds, which includes the rail and motor carrier safety area, and then $4.3 million of special revenues, which includes the Mercy Program and grade crossings. Just a footnote on economic recovery, since that continues to be an area of interest. The law does allow for rail improvements to be made, port improvements to be made out of the federal highway funds, an interesting provision that was in the law. As we've looked forward, we expect to make some investments in rail grade safety crossings out of the highway funds that are available. And certainly we'll be looking at the freight area, the rail area, and the port area as we look at some of the provisions in law that allow for competition for $1.5 billion worth of supplemental discretionary funds that are also available to this program, as well as any additional funds that might come to us as other states potentially do not spend funds or we see cost savings associated with the program that's going forward. So that's a quick snapshot of the freight area as well. Any questions before we move on?
Senator Jungbauer.
Just waited until you went through the whole thing, but in aeronautics under page 11, the $2.25 million one-time appropriation, it appears to the committee, the way it's presented, is that it's new money, and my understanding is it's just an allocation to spend some money that were collected in 2008 that were above the projections. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Gray. It's
really an appropriation from an existing fund balance. We thought that the fund balance would be in the range of $5 million at the end of the biennium, and this one-time appropriation was based on utilizing that existing fund balance and keeping some cushion, if you will, as a fund balance reserve. It was intended to maximize our ability to deliver projects. This was pre-stimulus and pre-February forecast.
Senator Jungbauer.
Just kind of wondering as we're on that, this section is, when we have those fund balances and we have projects that are ready to go and we're looking at all this other stimulus, wouldn't this appear to be the kind of year when we might do well to allow a lot more spend down to get some of these projects going while the bids are coming in? The bids we're hearing back from a lot of these projects are, they're substantially cheaper than projected, and
Wouldn't it be a good year to be able to take some of these fund balances down even further to take advantage of those good pricings?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, I absolutely, but it's a little bit of a seesaw. The more work that we have, it's kind of your economics 101. As supply and demand, as the demand increases, we're not sure what the pricing environment's going to be. We believe that people are hungry, and that part of the stimulus program, obviously, is for jobs creation and opportunity. So I don't have the answer for that, but I think that the other practical financial linchpin in this for the Trunk Highway Fund and also for the Aeronautics Fund is what is the available fund balance. And as you saw or heard, there's approximately $1 million a year anticipated softening in our fuel tax, aviation fuel tax collections. And right now, as a result of the February forecast, we're anticipating a fund balance of approximately $3 million in 2011 as opposed to $5 million. So I think it's prudent from a financial standpoint to revisit how much we spend down, because if the next forecast comes up and we're down a little bit more, then we're in the process of canceling projects. So it's a little bit of a juggling act. I'm not saying that this won't go forward, but I'm saying that we're revisiting this January recommendation from the governor's office.
Senator Junkar.
One more follow-on to that is, and I agree with you, and I understand the economics, that as we put more projects forward, some of the pricing will start to rise again. And I guess as we're ferreting out all these budget issues, it would be good to be able to at least be thinking in terms of certain projects if we get the proper bids. And I don't know how we'd calibrate that, whether it was some of our cities are telling us they're getting bids back 40% less than anticipated costs. So I think, you know, some of the departments ought to be thinking in terms of if we put something out to bid, because we don't have to take a bid if it comes in too high, that we ought to set some parameters and say, you know, we would put some projects out to bid, and if they came in at a specific pricing, that we might move some other projects forward that would benefit us in the future. You know, one of the potential other issues in terms of economics also is when you come out of a recession, we could see stagflation, which would make costs extremely high, putting stuff even further out in the future that might be issues of safety, especially in our aeronautics and some of the other key things.
Mr. Chairman.
Things.
Mr. Hinkle.
Senator Jungbauer, I appreciate your comments. I'll work with our Director Gary Workman on that suggestion. I know that we have $75 million worth of needs that's on the roster today in addition to what's already being programmed. We'll see if we can look at that issue and make sure we're in a position to be able to address those other needs with whatever funds might be available to us and try to put out as much as we possibly can in that arena.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Please continue. SRC.
Mr. Chair, at this point in time, we're going to jump to the back page of your handout, and it's labeled Local Roads. And we're going to do that to make sure that we get attendance today at the hearing. And Julie Skullman is going to talk through our local roads program and impacts and suggested changes there. And then we'll go back to the state roads, which is a meatier, longer discussion.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Julie Skullman. I'm the MnDOT.
Close to the microphone, please.
My name is Julie Skullman. I'm the MnDOT State Aid Engineer. As such, I'm responsible for the local road program, that is the county and state municipal state aid systems, 30,000 miles of county roads, 3,000 miles of city streets. What you will see in the budget this year is just direct appropriations of the money that has been collected. They get highway user tax distribution funds, just like the trunk highway system, and so the dollar amounts of about $500 million and $136 million are just what has been collected and is authorized to spend. In addition to that, we also do have any of the federal funds that go to local agencies come through our office, and so the budget also shows an estimated $100 million of federal revenues for 2010 and 11. In addition to that, we will have stimulus money that goes through the office, and that will be added to any other bills that MnDOT has. There is only one change request in the local road program, and that is that the municipal state aid fund administrative account, that is the money that funds my office, but in addition to that, it funds statewide programs, things that all of the cities together want to have. We are proposing to go from 1.5% to 2%. This is a change that was made by the counties about 4 years ago, and they have been able to have us do several statewide programs like road condition inventories for the entire system, some construction engineering software for all of the counties. And the cities have asked us and want us to do these kind of things for them, and so they fully support going from 1.5% to 2%. That is all that I had to say, unless you have a question.
Any questions?
Thank you for your
time. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you're going wish that Julie could stay for the state roads portion of this budget presentation, I think. We'll try to get through what is arguably a little bit more complex and a lot more numbers, and hopefully the committee will bear with me. I'm going to talk at a very high level, talk about our current base appropriations and some proposed increases consistent with, again, the governor's January appropriation requests. First of all, the state roads program, it really consists of several pieces. There's a planning piece. There is a piece that is the construction program development and delivery, which we oftentimes shorten to program delivery. That includes the planning, pre-design, final design, and even the construction project management, which is a separate bullet point here, for all the pieces around the actual construction costs of a project. So it's designing and delivering and administering the project. In addition, this program within State Roads includes our State Road Construction Program, which is a standalone appropriation where federal and state funds are dedicated to construction and right-of-way and some limited consultant project delivery. Finally, this is also, as we issue and identify bonding uses within the Trunk Highway Fund, our highway debt service is reflected as part of this program. To give you a sense of the scale, for 2010 and 11, with the additional federal funds that we're going to talk about that we anticipate coming in as a result of the later years of SAFE TLU, the current federal authorization program, we anticipate approximately $900 million and $1 billion of appropriation authority being necessary that will deliver our program and fund our debt service as well as manage the program. Approximately $200 million, just over that, $204 is our current base program level for program delivery. That $204 million does include funding from Chapter 152. So that is designed to deliver Chapter 152 as well as our regular program. Our current base state road construction program is $551 million. Now, you'll note in here the 591 figure and the 679 figure. As you'll see in our next slide, we are anticipating additional federal revenues to support projects in the range of $165 million for the biennium. And that will be on top of our base of $551 million. I'll talk a little bit more about the shaping, but the short story is that we'll be able to use $40 million of those federal funds in 2010 and approximately $125 million in 2011 to take, again, advantage of SAFE TLU funding levels. And then briefly, our anticipated debt service, at least as of the November forecast, was $101 million in 2010 and rising to $153 million in 2011. I should point out to the committee that this is not only the increase is primarily due to two things. One is obviously the Chapter 152 bonds are beginning to be issued and take hold, but also this represents kind of the escalating in issuance of the $400 million of bonds that were part of the bond accelerated program from 2003. So you're starting to see the debt service levels rise. That's a combination of some existing appropriation authority for bonds prior to the transportation bill, as well as the Chapter 152 bonds. And that number will continue to build over the next several years. Going to the next slide, I wanted to talk about our base appropriation increase to take advantage of the higher level of federal funds. It's on average $83 million a year. But the way that plays out from an appropriation standpoint is that we'll be asking for $40 million in the first year and the balance of about $127 million in the second year. Our ongoing base level adjustment will be this $83.8 million per year. So our program will grow from $551 million to $635 million approximately. Again, that is before the February forecast. The February forecast, as I mentioned, did see a decline in state revenues, and we'll need to look at our ability to sustain this level of construction appropriations. Secondly, kind of a bookkeeping adjustment, if you will. In the November forecast and in the governor's recommendations issued in January, we intend to reduce our state road construction appropriation in 2009 by $44 million. I say it's a bookkeeping adjustment simply because we were able to deliver and take advantage of regular federal funds and did not have to use advanced construction financing. So in the November forecast, we reflected $44 million less revenues. This is to reflect $44 million less spending. It's kind of an artificial number, has no program impact. But we need to make that adjustment. The governor also did propose to reduce program delivery by $2 million per year. That, quite frankly, was to get us to essentially a zero fund balance at the end of February 11. I think we have a change scenario now, so we'll be revisiting this request as well. And again, I apologize for this kind of seesaw of November forecast, February forecast, but the bottom line over the next week or two, I believe the governor and MnDOT will be offering up revised governor recommendations to address the February forecast impacts.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bonneau.
Mr. Great, are there any changes in our plans based on the changing market and with the interest rates going down and the change of value in bonds versus now versus some time ago?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Bonhoff, yes, but it's wildly unpredictable is what the Department of Finance tells me. I think that we anticipate for this upcoming biennium some adjustment to the interest rates or the premiums that are associated with them. So the end result is we might actually see a little bit higher financing costs. The good news, however, is that we've been able to issue approximately $85 million of bonds in the last 6 to 8 weeks. And so while there was a period of time where we weren't selling any bonds at the state level, trunk highway bonds or general obligation bonds, general fund bonds, I think that there's more stability in the marketplace. But that is a little bit of a day-to-day thing, and I would defer to Department of Finance about speculating our ability to achieve interest rates. But we're still don't think we're going to be gouged. The more important thing is to keep our strong AAA rating, and I think that's their discussion point.
Thank you.
At this point in time, I think we'd like to move to the second major state roads program, which is maintenance and operations, and I'll turn that over to Mr. Winter.
Mr. Winter, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Winter. I'm the director of the Operations Division. The Operations Division is the 8 districts around the state of Minnesota and the Office of Maintenance. I'm going to very quickly and briefly today cover the activity of maintenance and operations, referred to slide number 11 in your package. This is, as it indicates, the maintenance and operation of the trunk highway and the interstate system across the state of Minnesota and all the associated facilities. Our goal is to provide a safe, smooth trip with reliable travel times. The slide indicates some of the major services that are provided under this activity. I think they're all pretty self-explanatory. Smooth roads really has to do with our pavements, our pavement conditions, and our drainage and shoulders that the traffic that the motorists use. We have a number of measures around smooth roads that we continually monitor and manage to. Clear roads has to do with snow and ice removal and debris removal primarily on the roadway system. And again, we have extensive measures that we continually monitor. Traffic management is really that's has a lot to do with safety and efficient flow of traffic up and down the roadways. So that includes things like signing and lighting, striping, message painting on the roadways, as well as guardrail and traffic signals. This also includes the operation of the Regional Traffic Management Center, and the district traffic operations centers that are spread around the state of Minnesota, and also under this service we provide traveler information through 511 and changeable message signs and our website and a few other areas. The next area then is roadside, which is just that. That's pretty much the managing of vegetation along the roads, mowing, spraying for noxious weeds, litter control, litter pickup, and this service also includes our rest areas. Bridges is the inspection, the maintenance, and the repair of bridge. Under this activity, we're particularly paying attention to preventive maintenance on our bridges. That is to try to head off problems by being proactive up front and doing preventive maintenance kind of activities to extend the life of our bridges. The next area then is regulations. That's issuing permits and controlling work by outside parties on the right-of-way. The last area then is fleet facility management and inventory control. Again, it's just that. It's purchasing and maintaining the vehicles and the equipment that the department uses in carrying out the rest of the services. It's the planning and design construction of our building and our facilities, and the purchasing and control of materials, warehousing materials that we use in all of our activities.
Mr. Winter, we have a question from Senator Dahl.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Winter, I'm looking at this thing. It says it's a $44 million reduction in the budget recommendations this year for trunk highways. Is that correct, in the governor's recommendations?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Dahl, that is actually $44 million in fiscal 09, which is basically a bookkeeping adjustment reflected how we're financing federal revenues. It's a 2009 adjustment to expenditures. We've already in the forecast reduced our reliance on advanced borrowing from federal funds by $44 million. So this is kind of the flip side of that and has no project impact. And okay. It's on the state road construction side of the program. So Okay. Short story is we're grossing down our revenues and our expenditures for that with no project impact. We don't have to borrow.
Okay, that's
or bring
what I wanted to find
much.
Out if yep. there's any project impact.
Senator,
okay, thank you.
Senator Jungbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had to make note that I think Senator Dahl, because it's his birthday and he over-celebrated, he probably fell asleep when Mr. Gray explained that one a little bit earlier.
I'm sorry.
So. It is his birthday today, so we'll say happy birthday, and we're going to forgive you for that. But
thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would say, though, that it's not an easy principle to understand. And quite frankly, we have to think it through each and every time we look at this issue ourselves. So if we get only one question on this, I'll feel it's a success story in our explanation. To conclude for Mr. Winter, if I could, Mr. Chair.
I do have one question in this area. Is this the area we're talking about for combining purchase services for some of the operations, some of the materials, salt specifically?
Chairman, yes, that's correct. This is one of the areas that we're working very closely with the state of Wisconsin right now, looking at combined purchasing. Much of which would fall within this area, particularly in that last area of fleet facilities and purchasing and warehousing, and as well as a few other areas that we're also exploring.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next slide in your chart referenced a reduction of $2.5 million a year. Again, this is based on the old forecast, and we're revisiting whether we'll do this at this level or at all. The next and final program for state roads is under electronic communications, and essentially that's our communications abilities for dispatching and for mobile radios and permanent mounted radios in our trucks. In addition, we also provide service to several agencies for electronic communications equipment, including the DNR and State Patrol. We are, if you will, kind of the outsource environment for those agencies for radio installations and maintenance. Beyond that, we also are in charge of the armor installation. And I'm not going to hazard a guess. I think it's Allied something or other Matrix Emergency Response Network, and that's as close as I can get. But the short story there is that we are on point as the installer and provider of the tower and all the equipment for the expansion of our emergency response systems. This budget has no changes proposed. For state purposes, we have direct appropriations of approximately $5 million. In addition, there's at least that much work related to the armor installation and expansion over the next three or four years, I think, as we try to get statewide coverage. And this will also move us from an analog environment to a digital environment, which is very important for the communications folks. So we're very busy on this front, but there are no change requests. It's just that we have two masters now, the armor system and then our normal mobile communications. Skipping to the next page, and I think we're going to get close to your 3 o'clock time frame, Mr. Chair. The final program, which is the most modest program, approximately $62 million a year, is what we call general support and services. And again, as I referenced in my opening comments, this is essentially the back office functions of accounting and finance, public relations, government affairs, human resources and workforce management, those technology, those areas that every business and operation needs to move forward on. In addition, we also put approximately $12 to $14 million a year into our buildings, of which we own and operate over 1,000 buildings. I think that's a little-known fact how building-intensive we are. Granted, some of those are obviously salt sheds or very small truck stations, but geographically it's very important and a very sizable investment that we have. That's over 5 million square feet. These buildings also support all of our employees, as do all these functions, including the leadership and commissioner functions, supporting our agency wide employees and decision-making process. Briefly, there are no change requests relative to this, and the $62 million per year does include a modest increase from the Chapter 152 funding, primarily for buildings. Lastly, the February 2009 forecast, I've referenced this obliquely several times, and I just wanted to close with this so that we have a sense of the challenge, and over the next week or two, as we work with the governor's office to finalize budget recommendations as a result. Some of you have heard this, so I beg your indulgence. Our gas tax, we did take a modest adjustment downward in November, and it's down a little bit more in 2009, but manageable, and we don't plan on revising that forecast going forward. However, a little bit different story on TAB fees and MVES, and I'm going to cover MVES first because I think that's a precursor to the TAB fee discussion. Our MVES revenues are down slightly in 2009, but they're going down deeper than we anticipated from the November forecast in both 2010 and 11 by an additional 6% and 8%. The thing that is the ripple effect here is that the fewer cars that are being purchased, that's fewer cars that feed our TAB fee environment. And the first two or three years of our fleet generate the highest level of TAB fees. So by having a real downward spiral in MVES, we've been focused on that at the general fund level. But for transportation, it has a ripple effect. We're seeing a bigger spiral downward for our TAB fees as well. So the impact of that is approximately $65 million for 2010 and 11. And over and above that, we have some debt service changes that I'll talk about in a minute as well. The airport fund, we're seeing some softening primarily in our fuel taxes, probably in the range of $700,000 a year. Transit, they also share in the MVES proceeds, and Senator Dibble talked about the impacts to Met Transit. More and more proportionally, MVES is a greater and more significant piece of Greater Minnesota Transit revenues. In fact, it will be in excess of 50% of our revenue stream in the next couple of years. We're anticipating that MVES will be down by a couple million dollars in 10 and 11. $20 million overall. So that's a big chunk of change. Lastly, MVES leasing, which Senator Bonhoff in particular has been an advocate for, there was plans that this would be the funding source that would pay the $25 credit to lower income earners, I believe. And we're showing that there's going to be relatively less activity for 2011 and 12 when these were planning to go in. Our revised forecast demonstrates that we'll get no funding, additional funding from this pot, and it's speculative out into 13 and beyond. So we're not banking on this from a revenue standpoint to support our future state revenues. That's the bad news. The good news remains that our overall increases in funding as a result of the MVEST amendment in 2006 and last year's transportation bill is that we have less more to work with as opposed to less. So I don't want to leave with the most negative impression, but one of the hardest things for us to manage is our construction program, which we base long-term revenue forecasts to make our STIP and HIP plans, and this does throw a little wrench in that, and we're going to be revisiting that over the next couple of weeks. So I think the short story is that we'll have relatively few adjustments, again, as a result of the February forecast, but there may be some significant efforts to balance the shortfall in revenues and the increased debt service that we're going to have to absorb in 10 and 11, and minimally we'll have to adjust our recommendations downward by $80 million just to break even, and I think that all of us in this room would say that would not be it would be prudent to do much more than that, to have a fund balance that we don't have to come back to you in the next forecast and say, here we are again, it's down, we overestimated our revenue stream. So we're going to look at that very closely and intently and see what impacts that has on our state road construction program and operating budgets.
Any questions from the committee? Well, thank you very much. That was certainly very informative. And I think I can assure you that each, even though there are a lot of members that had other things that they had to do, they'll probably all listen to the recorded version of this.
Mr. Chair? I hope they're doing that in their beds about with a hot cocoa. Let's put it that way.
We have one question from Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a good question, but on behalf of Senator Bonner, she felt bad, but she had to leave. And just before you mentioned her name at the MVEST leasing, and I'm on behalf of the committee here, as Senator Murphy said earlier, wish you the best on your travels. So,
Senator, thank you very much, and relay my thanks to Senator Bonhoff as well. She's been a very big advocate for transportation funding and services, so as is this entire committee. Thank you. Thank you for your thoughtful questions today and allowing me to blitzkrieg through this whole budget as we did.
Your timing is absolutely perfect, Mr. Gray.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.